Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.
All right, everybody, welcome. You're listening to the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're your host for this evening. My name is Tristan Ducross, along with my son, as always, my partner in crime, Sean Ducross. Tristan, we have a great show in store for the listeners tonight. Local MMA scene is stepping up on Saturday. UFC Fight Night gets a change, and boxing takeover is happening. Sean, people that are fans of combat sports need to pay attention to what is happening right now in the boxing world, and that is the middleweight division. You're exactly right. We saw that this past weekend with Gennady Golovkin as he took on David Lemieux in what many people classified as more of a controversial ending.
Right. But that wasn't the only fight that happened on that card that resulted in a iffy kind of finish. But the David Lemieux that we all know, Sean, that we've all come to see, that his rise and his fall of his career has been evident. And something about David Lemieux has always been that at the end of the day was that David Lemieux had a puncher's chance. The chance. David Lemieux knew what he was getting himself into. And going against Gennady Golovkin, something that I said on last week's show is that what Golovkin should have done and what he did was exactly how I called it. Because I said that David Lemieux would need to get inside on the body of Golovkin, and that was his only opportunity to win. But you saw clearly that something that not a lot of people even knew that Golovkin had was a jab. Who knew that he was going to establish a jab when all his fights, he's never done anything to establish that jab? Who knew he had it? And that's the thing, is that I was talking to people on my Facebook. You can follow us on either find Tristan Ducross or Sean Ducross. You can find us. I'll interact all day long on Facebook. One of the things, though, I was making perfectly clear on Facebook was the fact that I was adamant about, you know, the stoppage was premature. But one thing I will not take away from Gennady Golovkin is exactly what you said. Is who knew he had such a fine jab? And when you look back at that fight and you look back and you watch what Gennady Golovkin was doing in that fight, it was a strategical Gennady Golovkin. It wasn't the guy that came out guns a-blazing, swinging for the fences. He knew what type of fighter David Lemieux was. He went and literally game planned for that David Lemieux. David Lemieux did not game plan for this Gennady Golovkin. I can see that. You know, when you're looking at two warriors, you're looking at what a lot of people classified as the fight of the night kind of deal. Remember? That's what they were talking about this fight. And when I look at this fight, I didn't see any of that. What I saw was a guy that had a game plan and a guy that wanted to show his boxing skills and not go out of his way to become reckless, to get out of his game plan, and fight somebody else's thing. Everybody thought this was going to be a slugfest. And, you know, to what point, as a boxer, do you change your game plan midstream during a boxing event? Because you heard David Lemieux's corner over and over and over again. Beat him to the jab. Beat him to the jab. And when David Lemieux would beat him to the jab, Lemieux was more aggressive, was pushing the fight, but then all of a sudden he would stop. He would stop countering. He would stop moving forward. That became an issue that was clear throughout the whole entire fight. And now let's get to the controversial about whether or not it was stopped earlier or if it wasn't. You and I were watching the fight, and the posture of the referee was telling us that he wanted to step in and stop it. When you are in the situation of this boxing fight of this magnitude, you do not want to give any type of wiggle room of potential controversy, Tristan, in any sense of the imagination. But when you are 2 feet or less away from a boxer, and the way that you're posturing, all indication shows that he was there waiting to stop the fight. If you know anything about David Lemieux's style, he takes punches as well as he gives them. Yes, did the body shot look like it hurt him? No doubt. Put him on the canvas. That eerie similar, the similarity of it made me a little bit nervous that when I saw that first body shot, it reminded me of the body shot that put Oscar De La Hoya down. The perfect body shot. It reminded me of that moment. And I was like, okay, that's a little bit different because he grimaced a little bit. Then when the eighth round came around and he hit him again with that body shot, yeah, you know what? He grimaced again a little bit. But did he stop at any point? Did he give you any clear indication that he wasn't going to be able to continue? No. He looked about as ready as he did in the first two rounds. The only thing that was his downside was his inability to get past the jab of Gennady Golovkin. If you want to see a prototypical fighter in this day and age that does what you want a fighter to do, and that is I'm going to go ahead and establish the jab, and then don't forget, I have power for days. Gennady Golovkin showed that. See, that's been my problem with Floyd Mayweather over the years. Yes, Floyd Mayweather can box. Yes, Floyd Mayweather has great defense. But one thing Floyd Mayweather does not have and never had was the ability to knock somebody out over and over again. But he could put on a boxing clinic. That's what made him such a feared boxer in his era, was his ability to put on a game plan, stick to it, and win. But in this new era, you got to basically put it all together. Gennady Golovkin is that prototypical boxer now. The strategic style, the powerful boxer. Not to take anything away from David Lemieux, but if David Lemieux wants to get another shot, like he said, against a Gennady Golovkin, he has to go back to the drawing board because he looked like an amateur. He did. He had no answer. He tried to get in, and when we all saw that he had an answer, that when he started to establish his jab, it was okay, now double up on it. When he doubled up on it, he rocked Gennady Golovkin a little bit here and there. But you got to keep that pressure going. You can't let off the gas pedal 1 second with Gennady Golovkin. Because if he starts getting comfortable, as you saw, he will systematically dissect you. And see, and that's the interesting point. You said it, Sean, is that he will dissect you and push you forward. The issue that I now see in the middleweight division, Sean, is Golovkin. You're looking at Miguel Cotto and Canelo Alvarez. 1A, 1B. One of those two is going to have to step in the lines in against Golovkin. The issue that I see with either one of those two, neither one of them, if you saw what he did to David Lemieux, literally, they stand no chance against Golovkin. Because of their style and the way they box. Tristan, they're not going to stand a chance against Gennady Golovkin if the referee is the same guy that ref that fight. Because apparently, he was the judge, jury, and executioner. Oh, wait, his chances were decreasing. His odds of winning the fight were almost non-existent. Who gives the referee the authority to make that call? Since when does a referee distinguish that he determines whether the fight stops or not? The last time I knew about boxing was the fact that when you are a boxer, you have a puncher's chance. At any moment, you can rip off one shot and it could end the world. And Lemieux has that power. Lemieux has taken shot after shot. We saw that against Hassan Nadal. He went down like twice in that fight while putting Hassan Nadal down 5 times.
And yet you say that his odds were decreasing. Who cares? You allow him to finish out his fight. Is he wobbly? Is he injured? No.
He took a body shot that buckled him. More than anything, took away his breath, but didn't do enough damage to warrant the fight to be stopped like that.
Let me hit you in the ribs and see how much you suck wind.
Right. Let's give him an opportunity to fend for himself.
When you've got the WBA title and you have the IBF title on the line,
it's a unification bout. You have to see this through. Clear cut, undecisive winner. If Golovkin wasn't going to knock him out, you allow this go to the judges. Because then at least it would be fair, not just say, well, a referee stopped in, so we really don't know about what the outcome could have truly been. Is that fair to him? Is that fair to David Lemieux to assume that? Because he was getting beat up badly. And I get it. But it gives you, it doesn't give you the right as a referee to call it. Because the doctors weren't in there. He was still talking to his corner man. He was still performing. Who cares he was losing rounds? You're telling me every boxer, if it was a Mike Tyson or Lennox Lewis that were in the ring, that you're telling me that you would step in there? Oh, well, he was losing on points, so we're just going to chalk it up to it is what it is, and I'm going to call it. Who gives you that right?
And if you're Canelo and you're Cotto, you're looking at this and saying, dude, I'm going to mark that guy's name down on the card.
I don't want him on it.
And I think that's what led us to the comment earlier today from Canelo Alvarez saying that in the first round, he's going to push Cotto. He doesn't want to leave it to the judges. Or in this case, maybe not leave it to the ref to make the judgment call. Who knows? But what we do know is, like I said last week and the week before and months before, WBC has came out and has said 100%, without a doubt, the winner of Cotto vs. Alvarez will have to meet Gennady Golovkin next. Bravo for the WBC for stepping in and saying, this is what's going to happen. You're not going to get out of it. They expect this to be dialed in after the fight between March and April. They're expecting that the fight will most likely end up in May during the Cinco de Mayo weekend. Somebody's going to get paid. Gennady Golovkin already did well in the box office with an attendance of 20,568 people. He didn't do good with pay-per-view buys, only helping bring in 125,000. That's not up to where they expected it to be. But the attendance was good, so the payout was pretty good. But you put guys, the Miguel Cotto and the Canelo Alvarez's, with bigger name value than Gennady Golovkin, you'll get more pay-per-view buys. You'll get more attendance.
I think if you put Gennady Golovkin against like a Cotto or against a Canelo Alvarez, I think the pay-per-view buys would be a lot better because not a lot of people knew who David Lemieux was.
Absolutely.
It would have been people were buying on the initial that, well, we like Golovkin, we like Triple G, we like what he's about, and people were pumping up David Lemieux to be this next guy that could push him, and you got what you got. But the next question is well, Gennady Golovkin, where does he go from here? We already got Cotto and Canelo Alvarez, but who else is up there? You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine, and we were talking about, dude, Porter versus Thurman? Are you kidding me? You want to talk about the next face of boxing?
Thurman's right up there.
Yes, he is. And he's been talking about the game for the longest time.
And now you got Porter that's saying, hey, dude, why don't you give me Thurman? We'll fight for the next one to face Andre Ward. And then the next guy for Andre Ward gets another shot at whoever wins in the Gennady Golovkin versus Cotto Canelo Alvarez. How is that something for the middleweight division? Now you're buying into the middleweight division.
No, you want to buy more in the middleweight division?
Yeah, that's all fine and dandy with what you said. Fine and dandy. But here's the twist. Here's the plot twist that many boxing fans are probably not paying close attention to. So, folks, if you are listening, hear me when I say this. Is that whatever the outcome, if Gennady Golovkin
gets his chance, it would make an interesting storyline if he takes on Canelo Alvarez. If Canelo Alvarez walks out of that fight as the champion, that's intriguing because of the fact that Canelo Alvarez is backed by
Bernard Hopkins,
Oscar De La Hoya. So Oscar De La Hoya lost once with David Lemieux. Canelo Alvarez, similar style to David Lemieux. What better pitting storyline with a guy that has name recognition, knows that he can sell, but is backed by Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya's boy just lost. Revenge is on his mind. Keep sending the De La Hoya boys to Golovkin, right? Maybe he becomes the next golden boy killer, if you will. And he knocks down everybody then. But you talk about, well, maybe about Andre Ward. And seeing about Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. Here's a reach of all reaches. Again, bring up the era that, well, what happens if Canelo Alvarez beats Miguel Cotto? That's the number two golden boy that had been knocked out by Gennady Golovkin. The only golden boy left that stands in his way, if he systematically beats Canelo, is the 51-year-old man himself, Bernard Hopkins. Yes, I know. Everybody just took a deep breath. Like, no, he didn't just say that. Well, I just did. 51 years old. Sometimes in this lifetime, you get the genetic freaks that are physically gifted that can do things for longer periods than they typically should. You've seen it in boxing with Bernard Hopkins, who defies the law of age. You see it in hockey with Jaromir Jagr. You've seen it in variations of different sports. So Bernard Hopkins kind of threw it out there Saturday night and said that he can be the one that can disarm Gennady Golovkin. He can make Gennady Golovkin fight his fight. That may be true, because if anybody knows anything about the execution of Bernard Hopkins, is the fact he's exactly that, an executioner. He is one of the premier boxers that finally put it all together at his age. He doesn't take a lot of shots, never has, never will. The new era of Bernard Hopkins is also the fact that he's not afraid to put on a show. He knows where the boxing world is at and what they expect. If you want to see this fight, it makes common sense because of the fact that De La Hoya, Bernard Hopkins, you look at that too, is the fact that it could be viewed as a 33-year-old versus senior citizen. Or it could simply be that you could go ahead and keep watching these star kids say, I'm the baddest dude on the planet. But yet when they stand in front of Bernard Hopkins, he'll simply put you to sleep like he's done with half of the other people he's beaten up in the last decade. But here's another thing. Since you're saying the old-timers are coming back, we briefly talked about this a little while ago, was that Roy Jones Jr. is on his way back. He's been fighting on the underground scene for a while, now getting his hand speeds back, getting his boxing skills back in tune. With the middleweight division where it's at currently, with the state of boxing where it's at currently, we might start seeing more of the vintage, more of the elite boxers coming through at the last minute. You may very well see the older guys wanting to lay the grassroots, if you will, of boxing and still try to stake some claim to the rising middleweight division of boxing. But Roy Jones Jr. is never going to be a middleweight again. He's a light heavy and he's a cruiserweight. That's what he is. He can go ahead and say that people may say, well, let's go see if he can make middleweight. He ain't. He's up in his age and he knows he is and he's going to fight the big boys and hope that his hands are quicker than the big fellas. And then he can get in and out of the big thoughts. That's where that's at. But this boxing thing, middleweight division, is the only division we're talking about. I wish the heavyweight division in boxing was something to talk about. But you've had the Klitschko brothers at the top for so long. Dude, just like what has happened with the middleweight division with Floyd Mayweather. You got to get Floyd out of the ranks, which, granted, he's retired for now. But you also have Klitschko, the Klitschkos. One of the Klitschkos are gone. You got the last remaining guy still standing. I think you just need to move on to greener pastures and call it a day and move on from the Klitschkos and develop these new talents in the heavyweight division to actually give them the rite of the passage, because their time at the top has been there. Ain't nobody going to dethrone them. Let's move on. Retire at the top of your game, hand the title down, and let's restart the boxing world. Let's be real about it. Let's restart this. Let's jumpstart. Sean, just like we are going to do it on this weekend, October 24th, at the Junior Sale Amphitheater in Oceanside, California. You guys got to look this card up. True Form Entertainment, Oceanside. Believe it. And then we also have UFC Fight Night gets a new main event, plus more with the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio. We are Sean and Tristan Ducross.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
Excelsior, Imperius Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
All right, everybody. We are back. I'm Tristan Ducross. On my side, as always, is my brother, Sean Ducross. Sean, huge show coming up this weekend. October 24th in Oceanside, California, True Form Entertainment puts on yet another show. And it's called Angular. I'm probably butchering that because I ain't never seen that. It's like an aquanarium kind of deal. I would rather prefer to steal a line from WCW and call it the Bash at the Beach. But I guess a name like that, it will work. But in the meantime, True Form continues to do something, stepping outside the box, trying to kind of make a name for themselves. We talked about it last week that we view them that they could be on along the lines of Titan FC, RFA. Heck, they even could go after WSOF if they wanted to. But when you look at this card in Oceanside, California, which we're going to be there, so if you want to talk MMA, you want to meet us, head on down to Oceanside Pier, and you can actually get to talk MMA, combat sports with your boys, the Ducross Brothers. But this card seems to have one question mark fight that I contemplate whether or not it's actually good for the business or bad. And that is Bobby Sanchez versus Jordan Winsky. I'm touching on that fight because I looked at it, Sean. Bobby Sanchez is 10-26. Whew! 10-26, folks. Jordan Winsky, on the other side, is ranked number 7th featherweight in Wisconsin. Bobby Sanchez is ranked 163. Bobby Sanchez in his last 10 fights has only won two. 5 times this kid has been choked out. I immediately had a flashback of Epic Fighting's alum in Chris Hansen being choked out every which way. That's my immediate reactions. Oh, Epic Fighting coming up November 6th. Chris Hansen's on the card. I wonder if he's going to get choked out again. I see Bobby Sanchez and I'm like, choked out, choked out, choked out, choked out, choked out, one, choked out, one.
That's the way this guy's record has been. I'm going like, dude, are you serious right now? Like, the only time he really won was when he got knocked out by a guy that was 9-28. What are you doing?
That's when you hope that the phrase that we've coined is evolve, evolution. You would hope that Bobby Sanchez is going to take this opportunity with TFE and grow and mold himself into a better fighter now on a go-forward basis. But again, it goes hand-in-hand with what I like to see, though, is that when you get two guys like this, desperation may creep in. It may be the most intriguing fight of the entire night. But do you not understand? You have a guy that's been in 36 fights. Jordan Whitsky's been in 5. Jordan Whitsky's 4-1, and he's already ranked 7th in Wisconsin. But see, if you're a bad boy who's already won 5 fights, and you're Jordan Whitsky, then you're like, huh, go ahead. Put a big fella in front of me with all the record in the world, and I'll show you why I'm the top dog in Wisconsin, because I'm going to put him to the pastures. It just goes across the bow to my fight that I had on my, because, you know, last week we did our top three each. Well, we're going to go do our top three each this week. That was your one fight that stood out. Well, mine is Jesse Cruz versus Samson Young. That fight goes hand in hand kind of with what you're saying. You're left scratching your head. Jesse Cruz is 8-4. Samson Yang is making his debut for TFE and his pro debut, who is 0-0. So on paper, you're like, whoa, this guy's got way more fights than this guy. How does this make sense? But then again, you look past the records, if you will, and you look at stylistically, it makes sense. Absolutely, because of the fact that you've got a guy who likes to either go to the ground or go to decision. He lost his last fight by submission. But I looked up Samson Yang. The guy looks like a bad dude in flyweight. So you're looking at it, that guy who took a debut fight against a guy who's 8-4, even though you and I have been outspoken about the mismatches of records and how the quality of fights are,
yeah.
You look back and you wonder that maybe these two guys are taking these fights to prove a statement because of the fact that TFE is now pro. And the fact is that, well, if they go into pro and they dominate a guy who's been a veteran, then it goes to show that, hey, maybe the UFCs, the Bellators, the WSOFs may be more inclined to look at so-and-so. Where when you look at the other promotions, if you will, that has had the big records versus the little guys, it was really, truly a mismatch. These, I don't think they're entirely a mismatch. So when you look at this, I think Samson Young is going to take this and surprise a lot of people. And I'm going to say he's going to knock out Jesse Cruz and a shocker in his debut. Just because of the fact that his pro debut with a legit promotion, with legit people behind him, it makes sense to kind of look past the record issues. It's not like the other promotions. It's viewed differently. It's looked at differently. You're going to approach the fight differently.
Well, you're talking about a guy that's making his pro debut. I'm going to talk to you about another guy that's making his pro debut, and that is Casey Partlett taking on Andrew Legadon in the lightweight division at 155.
Why does it just makes me want to say Megalodon,
right?
Megalodon, like the big old giant shark.
Correct. Maybe he's going to go after him and just eat him up.
I don't know, because, dude, Andrew Legadon, last time he fought was a year ago at Explode Fight Series. Need I say more?
He's 1-2 and was destroyed his last two times since stepping away from Explode.
Oh, that makes, just saying, 1-2, his last two fights he's been destroyed. Put 2-2 together, folks, just saying.
Casey Partlett, though, making his pro debut, I think that this is a good matchup on paper. Bad matchup for Andrew Legadon, because, dude,
You want to talk about a bad dude? Look up Casey Partlet. Dude, straight Muay Thai. Lethal kicks. Lethal knees. Not afraid to clinch. Loves to just go to work. In your old phrase, loves to stand and bang.
This card has everything that you kind of look forward to it. Like, the fight card that just happened in Indiana, the last TFE, the Gladiators won. The results that came out was that those fights all ended. Majority of them ended. TKOs, submissions. They came to put on a show. This card seemingly has that aspect too. Why? Because of the fact that this card features 8 fighters either making their pro or amateur debut. When you've got that many fighters that are making their debut to the masses, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to go out there and want to put on a show for the fans. So you remember who they are.
So, of course, somebody's going to get knocked out
or somebody's going to be put to sleep.
But the thing is that on this card, there's a guy that's a Bellator alum. Ian Butler is on this card from Bellator. Yeah, he's on True Form Entertainment's card. He's taking on George Burton. And I feel bad for Ian Butler because he's trying to get back to Bellator. He lost his 2 first fights in Bellator. And it wasn't just like, you know, oh, my bad, I lost kind of deal. Oh, it went to the decision. No, this dude lost at Bellator 131, lost at 137, lost via choke, and lost via strike. 2 ways you really don't want to see your pro debut in Bellator go went awry for Ian Butler. But he's taking on George Burton, who has a 2-fight win streak, has 1 decision and 1 choke, and he's beaten some tough guys in AJ Rangel and Dylan Woods. So George is facing tough guys. My question is, yours always, is as evolution, as we proceed to get better with ourselves, kind of play back and forth, watch tape, or understand what I'm doing better in. We spoke to Ian Butler a little while ago, remember, before he had to step away from MMA due to a health condition, was that Ian Butler said that he finally has a camp all to himself. And that he can focus 100% on himself.
Yeah, he's no longer with Victory MMA in San Diego. He left the gym. The only trainer that he has is Dean Lister from that gym. Other than that, he went back to his old striking coach down in, I believe it's Orange County. So Ian Butler, to me, on paper, is taking all the necessary steps to evolve.
And to push himself ahead of the curve.
So if you're George Burton and coming into this fight,
I don't want to face Ian Butler.
Because Ian Butler is coming in a guy, not necessarily in desperation mode, but he's coming in as a revitalized fighter, hungry now, wanting to get back onto it. He's been adapting and changing his style. He went to New Jersey for the Pancrase. So he's doing everything he can to build himself back up, to get back to where he feels like he should be, because he dominated in his first Bellator win. No, he lost in his first Bellator win.
Yes,
he lost. But in his first pro fight, he made noise.
Until he got choked out.
In Bellator. And then got knocked out in Bellator. You're going to see a different Ian Butler. This could be the steal of the show. This, on paper right now, is scheduled to lead off the event. That's a good start for TFE to start with. If you're in this fight, Ian Butler, though, it'll be interesting to see how well he adapts because of the fact that this is the second fighter that he's been scheduled to fight. Jeff Peterson has pulled out, now against George Burton. George Burton has taken this on short notice. Ian Butler has said, I'm good with it.
As long as I get to fight, I'm solid. Kind of along the lines of Sean Loeffler.
Who took a fight on 2 days' notice, you insane.
Right?
And won.
and one in Indiana. Are you kidding me?
That's just a bad dude.
Again, this is what it's all about in MMA. You got guys that want to get one last hurrah or want to push the envelope. So their last-ditch effort is to just give me a fight. Somebody, give me a fight. I want to prove that I can do this.
We see that with our buddy Zoe. Just give me a fight. Just give me a fight. Fighting November 21st for GPG. Just some guys that are built to fight just want to fight. Because not all the time are you guys going to get these big-name fighters. Not all the time you're going to get these fights that you want to elevate your career. But what you do understand is that at the end of the day, just give a fight, because there's a lot of people that for some reason they look across and they're like, dude, I'm not about that. I will not fight that guy. Like our boy Zoe. I can't tell you how many people that don't want to fight that dude. Yes, he's like 6'8", 450 pounds, like chiseled out of rock, and he's only a kid. I get it. You look at that dude and you're just straight like, all right, so kind of like what happened in Entourage when Turtle looked across the ring and said, I can last 30 seconds against Ronda Rousey. And then went, what's the time left? What's the time left? And then he gives a push kick straight to the fence. That's kind of what you see with guys like Zoe, or you guys see like Ian Butler. Like, yes, he's a pro. Yes, he's been at Bellator, but he's a fighter. So are you. Fight the guy. You know? You look at who's another guy. Oh, Ian Stevens, UFC, was on the Ultimate Fighter. Hasn't had a fight since Ultimate Fighter. Are you kidding me? He says that, oh, well, I've had several fights that I've been booked, but yet nobody's taking a fight. Either they pull out due to injury, pull out, missed weight. How's that fair to a guy that busts his butt and work hard and he can't even get a fight? We saw that with Nick Gonzalez. I just don't have it in me anymore. And yet you made Ryan Couture go through basically hell for a weight cut. He makes weight cut and you don't. I don't understand how these guys can. You have all these fighters that want to fight, that want to make a name for themselves, and yet you don't show up, or you claim that you're injured, whatever. I get it. These shows don't pay you an abundance amount of money. I get it. But Ian Butler, Sean, here's the thing about money. Ian Butler on Bellator, Sean, his first fight he got paid $1,500. On his second fight he got paid $1,100. You can make that fight for true form. Just saying. So let's be real here for a minute. These fighters are trying to make money. We just saw Nick Newell retire. And we got that coming up here soon. We got to look at the longevity of this sport. You got guys out there that want to make a living out of this, but yet people are not helping them out. We'll help you out. True Form Entertainment will help you out. You just got to be open-minded that if you're a fighter and a legit fighter and you want to fight, you'll find ways to fight. You might want to look at True Form Entertainment if you're a pro. They can guarantee you most of the time right now that you will get a fight some way, somehow. So stay tuned. October 24th. Junior Sale Amphitheater, it's going down. I'm not even going to say that name again. I just want to call it Bash at the Beach. Just because it's easier. But Tristan, before we go into break, though, you hit on your third person. I want to hit on my third person. Andrew Ram returns to TFE for a second fight against Bellator alum Chris Herrera. Again, another Bellator alum wanted to get his grime on. So why not? TFE is here. So my question is that which Andrew Ram will we see? Will we see the evolution of Andrew Ram where he's not the guy that was turning his back every 2 seconds in his last fight?
Right.
Or is he going to stand there and literally bang with Chris Herrera?
Because both men are coming off losses, though. Correct. But Chris Herrera is a guy that wants to stand and bang. Andrew Ram showed the ability that, hey, he'll stand there and take a shot even though turning his back at the same time. So it's going to be interesting to see how that fight goes. I know I'll be out watching Andrew Ram to see which guy shows up. But we'll be back. Absolutely, Sean. We got UFC Fight Night. Gets a new main event. World Series of Fighting. An unexpected rise. Only to fall flat. Stay tuned for more WSOF talk as well. Next with the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio with your boys, Sean and Tristan DuCross.
Excelsior and Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody. We are back. I'm Tristan DuCross, all on my side, all on my brother, Sean DuCross. Sean, we're kind of like Fanboy Nation, aren't we? In the aspect that we don't ask yes or no questions. We're not the, yes, this is how you're going to politically talk. Yes, we're going to ask you this question. We're going to talk like this. No, we're not robots. We're not. Neither is Fanboy Nation. So if you want to check out something unique and something innovative from MMA to combat sports to comic books to movies, fanboynation.com. But in the meantime, UFC Fight Night 76. Can you believe that we're already on UFC Fight Night 76? Like, just keep adding numbers and rotating at the end of the evening because that's pretty much what UFC does. Let's regurgitate more and more UFC and just throw it at people. Fight Night Dublin. Let's call it that. Dustin Poirier versus Joseph Duffy was supposed to be the headline. Oh, wait, let's pause on that for a minute. Joseph Duffy, 3 days before his event, Sean, 3 days. Ferris Zahabi out there training with Joseph Duffy. Joseph Duffy all of a sudden gets smacked upside the head. Oh, concussion, lights out, game over. Move on to the next. Joseph Duffy and Dustin Poirier, done. On to the next, on to the next, on to the next, on to the next. That's seemingly to be the theme of UFC Fight Night 76. On to the next, on to the next, on to the next. Because Miocic was supposed to face Ben Rothwell. But what happened, Sean? On to the next, on to the next. Because apparently Miocic got injured too. But wait, he already got a fight before Ben Rothwell. Because apparently Ben Rothwell is labeled as a filler just in case, or an alternate, just in case if either Alistair Overeem or Junior Dos Santos get injured in their fight. Then he'll slip right in. I guess that's a little bit more important than getting another fight. How is that fair? Hey, Steel Micic, because you cited that you were injured, we will pull you from your Ben Rothwell fight, but at UFC 95, you get Andre Arlovski. Because that's fair. You say Ben Rothwell's a filler. Okay. Talk about a filler? Well, let's go. Since we're in Dublin, Ireland, let's just go for the sake of it. And we're going to take Paddy Holohan, because he's from Dublin, Ireland, and throw him into the main event. Because that makes sense. Versus Luis Smolka, who has now been bumped to the main event. I'm a little torn about that being the main event just because I look at it and I'm like, dude, the only reason why this makes sense is because they're in Dublin, Ireland. Why not have Paddy main event it? Then Conor McGregor was all like, woo! I get to talk so much junk on Joseph Duffy and Dustin Poirier. And then he's like, oh, wait, now I get to root for my boy and Paddy Holohan and hope he wins. What is going on with the UFC right now? Does Conor McGregor have an identity crisis? Does he not know what is going on in the UFC that he just likes to talk? Because he's talking junk on Joseph Duffy. He's talking junk on Dustin Poirier.
Well, he's going to talk junk on anybody, Tristan. And Joseph Duffy was the last guy to beat Conor McGregor. And Joseph Duffy came out and saying that, well, I could beat Conor McGregor again. And open the floodgates. Here we go.
Right. But Paddy's won his last two fights via unanimous decision. And, I mean, his only loss came against Chris Caldias via unanimous decision that, I mean, really could have gone either way. So you're looking at one loss on his record. Same thing could be said about Smolka. Same thing as Paddy. Lost to Chris Carsasso. And he's on a two-fight win streak. But my only issue is you're looking at Dublin, Ireland. I think there's so much more hype now around Paddy about what he can do and what he brings to the table in terms of, I believe he's going to feed off the crowd.
I can see that. Is that when you're in Dublin, I believe that you have that type of mojo. Yeah, the crowd's going to be chanting you. I bet you 10 more when we're going to hear chants of ole, 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 because apparently they do that in Dublin, Ireland, too. You're going to hear that chant. It's going to be as if you're in a soccer arena for this fight, whether you are for Paddy Holohan or not. This is going to be a good fight, but this card from top to bottom is nothing to write home about. There is no name value. There is nothing behind it that says anybody's going to tune into this.
You're lucky this is on free TV.
Even then. Even on free TV, gotta grit and bear it.
Yeah, even
how long? 3 hours of my life that I might never get back watching this UFC Dublin, Ireland. The only exciting thing might be is that Paddy might come out with the Ireland flag, and maybe you could get Conor McGregor's corner man running out there going, no, no, I forbid that shirt for Ireland because it's racist.
Oh, you saw that shirt too?
Yes.
That just looked wrong.
Right.
I was like, no wonder why they pulled it. It's like wondering why Reebok pulled all their Reebok kits off of their online, apparently. Let's just keep pulling everything while UFC cuts 50 people in 2 weeks.
You can't afford to pay those people, folks. You can't. So what do? Is your best interest? Okay, well, we're going to lay off 50 people.
Why?
Well, because we just
can't afford to pay you. But you can go ahead and tell your fighters that the reality of the situation is that we're going to lie to you. We're going to tell you that, well, you're just not good enough to make the UFC. So we're just going to cut you. No, no, no. Trust me, it's about the moolah. It's about the money. That's what's truly going on behind the scenes is that Reebok ain't bringing in all the money. The Reebok kicks, the kits ain't selling a lot. So they're trying to cut their losses where they can. It's going to be interesting to see if this is actually 100% true. And that if this is going to stick or just an error and an oversight on Reebok's website. So I think everybody is going to be paying very close attention to that.
But I think you ultimately have to. Because we said it from the beginning that the Reebok deal was a joke and a half. And you're seeing that the Reebok kits are not selling like the UFC had thought. They look like Power Rangers. You've seen the memes everywhere. I mean, for crying out loud, Fightbook MMA is notorious for the MMA memes. So they have the Power Ranger ones. I'm sure you've seen it too. But it's not selling. It's not doing anything.
I'm just waiting now for them to go ahead and tweet us. Then we retweet it. And then it gets viral again, just like last week with the whole Dana White and the family fiasco situation.
Oh, with Sage Northcutt and Paige VanZant,
yes.
And Conor McGregor. Yeah, it's a family affair.
I would like to see if we can get with Fightbook and see if we can make that still go so viral that it starts trending on Twitter.
Hashtag Dana White family.
Or hashtag Power Rangers UFC. I don't know. Just ideas. Our buddies at Fightbook will probably be able to come up with a better name than we can.
Better name than you can.
But the whole mindset of this fight goes hand in hand with what we just saw with World Series of Fighting 24. Left you scratching your head because I told you what was going to happen. I told you what was going to happen in the main event. John Finch versus Yushin Okami. Snooze fest.
Ain't that the truth?
Shocker. It was a grappling match. Like, shoot, you know those Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournaments that go on? Kind of that way. But except for there was no submission attempts. There was little striking. It just left you dumbfounded about what you were watching.
Dude, Tom Lawler went to Twitter and posted about Fitch. You stuck your tongue out and did devil horns. Classy, yet you had a boring fight. That's what we're seeing out of John Fitch. John Fitch used to be one of the top guys in his division.
But he's always been a lackluster fighter. He's always been the styles of the Phil Davises or the Ryan Baders. That's been his style for the longest time.
But I like the fact that John Fitch points his finger and blames it on Mike Quick about why his performance was lackluster. Because he allowed Mike Swick to get into John Fitch's head because he told John Fitch that, oh my God, Yushin Okami's power is ridiculous. So he was so scared that he had to play, end quote, save because of his power. But yet he claims that he didn't have a lot of power. He's more quick than anything. And by being quick, Yushin Okami now lost his last two fights in WSOF. And he seems faster at 170 than he did at 185.
Well, that's good because he's got the nickname called Thunder.
But I'm trying to figure this out, though. So he's faster at 170 than he is at 185, but yet he was bigger at 170 than he was at 185, but yet he has no power at 170, but had a lot of power at 185? Like, am I just being confused by what these guys are saying? Or does that just not add up at all?
No, it doesn't add up at all. But what doesn't add up at all is the outcome of Matt Hamill versus Vinny Magalaris. Is that in that fight, Matt Hamill looked pretty good. He rocked Vinny early, took him down to the mat, started raining some ground and pound, and then all of a sudden, Vinny grabs the leg, and that's all she wrote.
Actually, went from an arm bar to a knee bar because he slid down his leg and went, oops, I see limb, grab it.
It's because he was like this. He was like, shake off, shake off, shake off. And he's like a little baby sliding down a pole. And then he's like, ooh, mommy, I see leg. Please don't leave me.
And then you look at Matt Hamill. Matt Hamill's just like, staring at him like, dude, let go of my leg. You're not a little kid. And he's like, I got you.
Let's play. Let's play tug of war.
Snap. There it goes. Tag. I'm out. I'm out. I quit. Quit, can't take it.
So you begin to wonder if we'll see Matt Hamill again or if Matt Hamill just say, yo, I'm out.
Dude, Matt Hamill, mad respect, dude, for coming out of retirement. But you went into retirement for a reason. Stay in retirement. You're not Tito Ortiz. You can't bounce back and forth between retirement, not retired, retired, to not retired. Stay retired.
And then on top of that, speak about retirement. Nick Newell announced retirement at the age of 29. Does that surprise you? No, not really.
Sean, I
said it last week. I like Nick Newell. I love everything that he's done for the sport. I respect the guy for everything that he's accomplished in his time. I love his story. But unfortunately, like I said last week, his ceiling has been hit. His wall's been hit. There's nothing left that he can do with one arm, unfortunately. He defied all the odds. So if you're a kid that has a learning disability of some sort,
you got to look up to Nick Newell
and realize that if Nick Newell can do it with one arm,
so can you.
So that's a story in itself,
right,
and I applaud
dude,
that.
He went 3-0, took on Justin Gaethje, and lost, and wins in his last fight.
for the WSOF.
Bravo for him. He says that he had to bail out because he's done living paycheck to paycheck, and there's just not a lot of money in it for him. There probably wasn't. There's not a lot you can do to promote him, unfortunately. There's not a lot of big-name fights that he can go ahead and take because of his disability. But he still did what he could with what was given, and I applaud him for that. And I applaud it for him, whatever he does next. It was a pleasure to watch him fight. It was a pleasure to be at a World Series of Fighting event in Ontario. We were at the first ever Nick Newell fight for WSOF in Ontario. And I remember meeting the kid. I remember watching him walk up and looking over at everybody and saying that this could be the best thing for fighting in general, for somebody to look up for if he would have won his first fight. And you know what he did? He did it in dramatic fashion via choke.
Yeah. So I give him props. Bravo, Nick Newell. Congratulations on all your success and whatever you end up doing in the future.
Success for World Series of Fighting, it's going to come at a price. And at what price is it going to come out when World Series of Fighting 25, November 25th, the 8-man tournament, one night, the brackets were released. The first bracket, Brian Foster versus Zhao Zafrino, Luis Palomino versus Rick Patizniak. Second bracket, Brian Cobb versus Mike Ricci, Islam Medav versus Jorge Patino. Thank you for saying all the names. Really do appreciate it, buddy.
You're welcome.
But my question, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it here in the next week or so.
Because of what?
I'm not going to announce it right now. So you have to stay tuned to our Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross. Find us on Facebook. Add us. We don't bite. We love to talk combat sport,
right?
But I was a little confused about why you would put Brian Foster and Luis Palomino on the same side in the same bracket. When those two, we know, are going to stand and bang. We know they're going to punch each other in the face.
Oh, this is true.
So you've got to fight three times in one night. Those two guys will be lucky to make it to the end. So do they have a backup plan?
I don't know, because, I mean, dude, that's going to be an electric fight. We saw at Bellator's, with Bellator's tournament was that Lent Vassal could not go. You saw that Muhammad Lawal could not go. So if somebody gets injured, I haven't seen yet if they have an alternate. I haven't seen it.
No, but, I mean, you got Luis Palomino versus Rick Patishnok, a ground guy, both strikers, Brian Foster, Zhao Zavino, ground guy versus striker, two strikers in the second round with Cobb and Ricci.
Who do you got in your final?
I got Luis Palomino versus Mike Ricci.
I got Foster and Mike Ricci.
But you know what? We're the DeCross Brothers. We're out. We'll see you next week. Check us out, Sean and Tristan DeCross on Facebook. You can also check out our website, www.thehotspotshow.com.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.